Acabamos de ouvir a Ana Melhoa com o tema Nada é Proibido e também Tina Montes, Força para a Felicidade. E antes, Heróis do Mar, Só Gosto de Ti. E agora temos Eduardo Pereira com Nuti.
Hey, students. Have you stumbled in your course and want a fresh start? Well, At the Best University has your back. AU offers more than 850 courses that align to your program, so you can retake your course online, turn that grade around, improve your GPA, explore new subjects, and study from anywhere. Visit atthebestu.ca to browse our online courses and transform your education today.
Hey, all you Tiny Horse fans, want to hear your favorite indie rock band in a way you've never heard them before? Come out on October 4th to the Isabel Bader Center for the Performing Arts to hear Tiny Horse perform in an acoustically engineered space. Friday nights in the Recital Hall concerts are all ages and licensed. Tickets are $20 each, and they're going fast. Check out queensu.ca, the Isabel, for details. Release it all.
From the New York Underground to Kingston's Grand Theater, Grand On Stage presents the Hot Sardines.
Buy me a Mr. Shane. Please let me explain.
Performing songs from their latest album, C'est la Vie, a bilingual blend of original jazz songs and timeless standards. The Hot Sardines, Friday, October 4th at Kingston Grand Theater. Tickets for the Hot Sardines and the rest of the Grand On Stage season are on sale now at kingstongrand.ca.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Monday Morning Mixtape. And this is something of a special Monday Morning Mixtape, as it's not going to be as off the cuff as you come to expect from me. Rather, we're going to have some scripted material because we're going to be talking about an album that I love, one that has a great deal of personal significance to me, and one that I think is a groundbreaking piece of Canadian rock and hard rock. Today we're going to be discussing the eponymous release, Billy Talent, from 2003. 2003 was a transitional period in mainstream North American rock. The end of the mid-90s grunge boom led to something of an identity crisis for the genre. Alt-rock proved to be a viable source of hits and radio play, but even that had started to wane at the beginning of the new millennia. Rap rock, nu metal, pop punk, and the watered-down post-post-grunge dominated airplay. Bands like Limp Bizkit, Puddle of Mud, Creed, and Nickelback personified the worst excesses of this era. In 2003, Nickelback was the only one of these bands still finding consistent success, doing so by following an extremely formulaic approach that made daily radio listening a tedious affair. If you were a Canadian radio listener, your rock options were limited to Nickelback, Theory of a Dead Man, Finger Eleven, The Twilight Years of the Tragically Hip, and the quote-unquote classic rock stations that played the same 30 songs seemingly on repeat each and every single day. Rock music had grown stagnant in the country. Perhaps this is why Billy Talent's eponymous release found immediate purchase in the fall of 2003. Billy Talent felt fresh, new, and wholly authentic, proudly obtuse and totally unpretentious. The songs told stories from the perspective of burnouts, weirdos, and outcasts. Lead singer Ben Kowalowitz's vocals were raw and emotive, an instance of substance-matching style going perfectly with the subject matter of the songs. These vocals were paired with the smooth, polished, and exciting guitar work of Ian Dessau, unquestionably the band's MVP. Combine that with consistent bass play from Jonathan Gallant and powerful percussive rhythms from Aaron Saloniak, and you've got a recipe for something special. One of my favorite tracks from Billy Talent is actually the opener, This Is How It Goes, which at the time Ben Kowalowitz said was written about a friend who had been diagnosed with multiple sclerosis. In the years that followed this track, it was revealed that Ben himself was the subject of the song, and it's one all about how unfair life can be, and the inherent helplessness we feel in the face of something we can't control, such as a degenerative condition like MS. There is a well-earned sense of cynicism in the chorus, "This is how it is, and this is how it goes." Knowing that there's nothing you can do to change this situation, you resign yourself to it, and you soldier forward, moving on. And in the case of Ben Kowalowitz, he turned this very real personal turmoil into a piece of art that still resonates 21 years later. I saw this performed last October here in Kingston, and it was one of the unquestioned highlights of their set, and it is a perfect opener to introduce fans to Billy Talent. We'll be right back. autumn of 2003, I was 9 years old. I would be lying if I told you that I had heard of anybody from the Toronto indie music scene. I was not familiar with Billy Talent. I was not familiar with Pez, the proto-form of the band that played songs with more of a ska and funk inspiration to them. In the autumn of 2003, I heard Try Honesty for the first time, and it completely rewired my brain. I had never heard anything like it prior to this. It was a totally new experience for me. My music listenership and experience at this point was quite limited. Yes, I listened to the mainstream rock radio that gave me such luminaries as Nickelback, Puddle of Mud, and Theory of a Dead Man. And yes, I did have appreciation for REM and their alt-rock stylings by way of my parents. But Billy Talent was something completely foreign and new to me, and I found it to be so exciting. Not only was Try Honesty a great introduction to the band for me, but it was also a great introduction to harder music, the likes of which I would really delve deeply into in my adolescent years. What I'm saying is Try Honesty hit me at the perfect time. I was not yet in my teen years, but there was a growing sense of angst within me, and a lot of the subject matter discussed in the song are things that I would resonate with on a deeper level as I grew older and did some, let's say, self-reflective work. The band has gone on the record to say that Try Honesty doesn't stick to any singular theme, and I think that's a fair interpretation. I mean, they wrote it. But to me, there are two readings that have always kind of stayed with me with Try Honesty. The first is probably the more direct one, backed up by a lot of the lyrical content within the song, which is Try Honesty to me is all about this generational cycle of abuse and trauma, specifically in a familial setting. I always read this song as a blow-up argument between a child and their father. The child is screaming at them for years of abuse and trauma, whether or not it was intentionally inflicted. The pain, the hurt, it's all real, eventually culminating in just them saying, "Everything about me that's screwed up is your fault." Quite literally, the line is, "I'm insane, it's your fault." And this cry to Try Honesty really, to me, is almost like a mocking, ironic suggestion of the one thing that maybe this father figure hasn't done or hasn't tried yet to improve this relationship. To me, the other reading of this song that I've had in more recent years looks not so much at familial relationships and trauma, but rather trauma in a religious setting. The use of the word father is not a paternal one, but rather one referring to a figure of power within a church. Now, this reading, admittedly, I don't have, let's say, the same level of depth available with, but it's something that I feel is valid, partially because the band would go on to expand this notion of religious trauma, specifically the harms that sexual abuse in the church can cause, in the lead single to their second album, Billy Talent 2, one of my favorite tracks of all time, period, Devil in a Midnight Mass. No matter your interpretation of the song and its lyrics, Try Honesty is regarded by fans as one of the band's best. It is a longtime fan favorite, and it's one that had a profound impact on me. So here we go. This is Billy Talent and Try Honesty.
Thank you. Attention, women in science, technology, engineering, and math. Whether you're a seasoned professional or just starting on your journey, the Society for Canadian Women in Science and Technology is here to support you every step of the way. From mentorship programs to networking and skill-building events, we've got the tools and resources you need to succeed and thrive in STEM. Visit squis.ca to learn more. That's SCWIST.ca. We can't wait to connect with you.
It's how we see the world, which is that everybody is made up of lots and lots of different personalities, fantasies, attitudes, and that a multi-personality is in fact the reality, not the I personality. And that where those two things meet is the position that we're trying to work at, to break people across from seeing themselves as one-dimensional and having no potential, to seeing themselves as being almost anything they want to be, and that those different things don't have to always agree in the usual accepted way.
No Static, every Monday from 6 to 8 on CFRC 101.9 FM and CFRC.ca. You never know what you're going to get.
One thing, but we've been in your room, lending your clothes to we.
is one song on Billy Talent 1 that has aged tremendously, not just in terms of the musical quality, but unfortunately because the subject matter still remains painfully relevant even in 2024. River Below first came to my attention thanks to its excellent music video, depicting a man battling his mental illness, stuck in the mud of suburbia, burdened by his own thoughts of inflicting mass violence and death on those around him. Indeed, the music video, which felt like almost a spiritual sequel to the movie Sideways, sees the band playing loudly in their garage as the final breaking point for the mentally unbalanced man who washes everyone to the river below with the press of a big red button. This music video received a ton of play on Much Music at the time, and it's still burned in my brain as one of the best music videos from this era, and I think the best music video the band would make, my personal favorite alongside Devil in a Midnight Mass and Surrender. There is not a great deal of nuance in River Below. We don't need to do mental gymnastics to understand the core conceit of the song. The band have come out and said that it was inspired by two acts of mass violence perpetrated in the United States. The first was the 1995 Oklahoma City bombing perpetrated by Timothy McVeigh, and the second was quite contemporaneous, the 2002 DC Beltway sniper attacks. I think River Below is probably the most well-written song on the album. It cuts to the core of a lot of these central motivations for perpetrators of mass violence. The undiagnosed or untreated mental illness, bipolar with a mental sidearm. The desire for fame and notoriety. You'll think I'm insane, but they'll all know my name. And even the core root of a lot of these mental health issues, this feeling of isolation or rejection, rejected since day one. It's a song that provides the pathos without providing the validation or justification for these acts of mass violence, and it is a great shame that it still is so prescient 20 plus years later, as the cycle of mass violence, especially in the United States, has not slowed, but rather increased at an exponential rate. I also find the positioning of River Below to be very interesting on the album in general. It comes directly after the radio hit The X, which I heard a ton throughout 2003 and 2004, which you can surmise from the title is about an individual dealing with a particularly difficult breakup. Then you have River Below, which is about an individual who has been pushed to a breaking point and is considering or actively perpetrating acts of mass violence, and that is followed up with Standing in the Rain, a song about the experience of a sex worker in Vancouver's East End. So within a three-song set, you have an individual kind of raging and dealing with self-loathing from a breakup, an individual who is considering perpetrating acts of mass violence, and then an individual who is actively experiencing acts of intimate violence, either of a physical or, unfortunately, sexual nature. The implicit and explicit violence and trauma we face on a day-to-day basis, to me, is the thematic core of Billy Talent. And no two songs exemplify that more than River Below and Standing in the Rain. We'll be right back.
Dirty. There is no doubt you throw your inbox out. There is no doubt you throw your inbox out. There is no doubt you throw your inbox
out. Cut the curtains, they act as if God knows.
No time.
My only real gripe with Billy Talent's eponymous debut is how it ends. In my opinion, ending on Voices of Violence is a bit of a so-so concluding song. The much more interesting and, I think, thematically relevant Nothing to Lose immediately precedes it on the album, and I think if they had chosen that as the album closer, it would have been a masterful decision by the band. The reasoning behind this is twofold. One, Voices of Violence just isn't a particularly interesting song. It's got a nice driving beat to it, but it's mostly unintelligible. Outside of a rather evocative and striking title, I just don't think the song ever hits the same level that Nothing to Lose does. Now, Nothing to Lose is not a song with a great deal of lyrical or aesthetic nuance to it, but it is a song that I'm sure was strikingly relevant to a lot of people listening to Billy Talent. Like several other tracks on Billy Talent 1, Nothing to Lose is inspired by true events. The song was written following the suicide of 15-year-old Greg Doucette, who tragically took his own life at his Brampton area high school in 2002. The music video reflects this theme. It gives us a silent protagonist, someone who is seemingly invisible to the rest of the world except for those that bully and pick on him. As an interesting counterpoint to the protagonist of River Below, rather than inflicting acts of mass violence on others as a form of retributive justice, the protagonist in Nothing to Lose inflicts the violence on himself, culminating in him taking his own life. The music video for this song was a controversial one, but one that I think was deeply important at the time and quite groundbreaking. Notably, the music video does end with the Kids Help Phone Hotline number superimposed onto the screen. In addition to being a powerful, evocative, and relatable track, I also think Nothing to Lose is a good glimpse into what the band would do with future albums, especially that kind of slower, more melodic ballad style that we would see at times on Billy Talent 2. This is why I think this should have been the album closer, because it does tie nicely into the future direction of the band. With this gripe aside, there is no doubt that Billy Talent's eponymous debut is a landmark piece of Canadian rock music history and gave the band a strong foundation upon which they would build a successful career. They are still recording and touring to this very day, and I've experienced it firsthand. Their live shows are top-notch. To close out this special edition of the Monday Morning Mixtape, we are going to play Jesse's cut of how Billy Talent 1 should have ended, with Voices of Violence leading into Nothing to Lose. Take care of yourself, folks, and I hope you'll join me again next week for more of your Monday Morning Mixtape.
Reflected in the mirror, these flowers have grown from bloodstains on the ground. just like my telephone.
There's nothing to lose.
Oh, and no one knows your name.
There's nothing to gain.
But the days don't seem to change. Yeah.